Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Guru Nation, welcome to episode 181 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This is Dan. We've got Chris Sauber here.
Hello.
I haven't done one by myself in a while.
Well, at least two.
The last two have been with you, sir. So this one is kind of like where we left off last time. There's a few different things we can discuss here, but it's basically running a site and the dynamics behind running a site. And there's a lot of, ancillary areas we can travel. If you want.
Okay.
If you would like.
Maybe Guru Nation would like.
Guru Nation would like, Sauber Nation would not?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see where this goes.
So, we just did an IQ test. I'm very happy with my score.
What? 180? 180?
No.
Oh.
Chris got 10 points higher, right?
Did not.
Yeah, you did.
8.
What did I score?
122.
Oh, I scored a 122? I thought I scored a 120.
122.
Okay, and you scored a 130.
Correct.
Okay. Chris still scored significantly higher than I. You're at like almost flirting with genius level. I looked at the results. Yeah?
What's genius?
Genius is like 135.
I should have went to school longer. According to you.
According to me, and we're not going to get into all of that, but that was just something cool to throw out there. I'm very happy with my score. I still think a high IQ at some point produces diminishing returns or works negatively against you in real life.
Because it affects EQ.
Yes. Like the stereotypical, we were talking about this earlier, stereotypical Sheldon from Big Bang.
Sure.
He probably would score like a 150.
We disagree on the components that drive your IQ score. But we agree on that.
Yeah, and we're not going to get into the components because
I mean,
there's podcasts dedicated to this.
Sure.
We're not going to get into that.
Sure, but I agree with the diminishing returns on EQ.
Yes, the alt-rights and the libtards will argue endlessly about these things.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going into either one of those camps.
Nope.
Right? Yep. Don't drop your phone. You're going to have to lower your IQ score a little.
I got it.
130. Very good. So, yeah, I do think at some point, I don't know where that point is, and probably for everyone it's different. I think there's an ideal functioning IQ, like an optimal IQ in the business world. And I think that number changes based on what you choose as a career. Like as a business person, I don't think you need an extremely high IQ. I think you need like average IQ, which is 100 something.
It's 100, 100 exactly.
100 exactly. I think if you're like a scientist, obviously you need a higher IQ.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
If you're an attorney, if you're a doctor, you need a higher IQ. If you're a site owner, I think it's 100.
What if you're dealing in customer relations?
I don't think you need an extremely high IQ. You can be average.
More important for EQ, right?
Yes. Yes, and I do think at some point, again, for everyone's different, And for every position, our career, the number will change, but you can have too high of an IQ at one point. I'm not saying that's you, but I think
depending on what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I in college, I had friends who would score like super high on this, but they were like not personable people at all.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, one of my old business partners, you know who it is,
mm-hmm.
he probably would score like 140.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to work for him.
Yeah, no EQ.
Zero.
Right.
So I'll even take 20 points less than what I got
mm-hmm.
if I can have more EQ.
Sure.
Right. But anyways, fun fact. Now, sight dynamics, speaking of IQ, we're sight owners. There's a lot of sight owners listening. There's a lot of people that work at sites listening.
Mm-hmm.
Workload, just like we were talking about IQ, EQ balance, is there not a workload... optimal workload balance for a site? Because ideally what you want to do is maximize profits, but that means just overload your staff with work, which will backfire, and it's counterintuitive, but you're actually not going to be as profitable when you have turnover
in the long run.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that optimal? I think the optimal IQ is a 122. Wait, what did I get? 120. I'm just messing around. But you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
So what's the optimal workload life balance for, let's go a different tiers of sites. Okay, I was just talking to somebody earlier today from a big industry vendor. And he's trying to understand site dynamics. And then we broke it down because he's aware, you know, that you have the academic institutions where there's more bureaucracy than at sponsors.
Sure.
Right? Then you have like the large clinics, like the big ones out there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the mid-size ones that are like trying to get to that point, or maybe not, but they're like mid-size. Mm-hmm. And then you have all the fragmented mom and pop PIs.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go through each one of these sites. I know you and I don't have much experience with the academics, but we've worked with or owned the others.
Right.
Right. So we're going to try to figure out what the optimal, I guess, dynamics should be at these sites.
Well,
so let's start best with here, where we're sitting.
Well, I think for the individual site owner, especially on the smaller side, I think you also have to take into consideration your current need, right? And what I mean by that is, suppose for some reason you need a lot of cash now. Right.
Mm.
Right. So you might need to push a little harder, upset some people.
Let's say
overwork.
Let's say, I don't know. Hypothetically, we're trying to buy a building.
Right.
Or so you push the throttle down.
Right. To generate revenue.
Now, do you communicate to the staff why you're doing this, or do you just do it?
No, I think that communication with your staff. Hey, this is going to be a fairly short-term situation. I know you're getting worked to the bone. You know, we'll get some staff in here or diminish the workload at some point. But right now, at least I would approach it that way. Right now, we need to generate a lot of revenue.
So you would communicate.
Yep.
So it'd be more like a democracy.
Well, that's not necessarily a democracy.
So they don't get to vote.
No, they have no say in the matter.
You just tell them. So you're a benevolent dictator.
I guess so.
I still think that's the best form of government.
Yeah, it depends. But the problem, well, we don't need to go into that.
No, because that would be, like, first of all, we would need a different YouTube channel for that.
Right.
Yeah.
The problem's replacement is what I was going to say, but anyhow.
Right. So, benevolent dictator. And that's the way I am, too, or how I was. You know, you try to communicate, but then you... See, plans rarely go as
planned
efficiently as you thought.
Right.
Especially for me, I'm very optimistic. So I have to be careful when I communicate to staff or to PIs even. Like, let's say new PIs. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been working 6 months and they haven't got paid yet,
mm-hmm.
because we have a deal where we only pay you once we get paid.
Right.
So I've had to do this a bunch of times where I'm just talking to the PIs, over communicate, like, hey, I'm not stealing from you. We just haven't got paid this hour. Like, I remember one particular PI, I would do this every time I saw her, like once a week. Hey, right. I know it's tough. Like, what? And then when the payday comes, it's big. Right.
Right.
But then I tell her, hey, this is because of all that work we've done. Right. They should be more regular now, but only if we continue
what we're doing,
seeing the activity we've been doing.
Right.
Right. So with PIs, it's a little different. I think they usually have other streams of income, so they're not as...
They're not dependent upon research.
They're not dependent upon research, and they're not like stressed for that money, right. usually.
Right.
With coordinators, you can't just pay them when you get paid. I mean, you can, but that's not a recommended. You're paying them a salary.
Mm-hmm.
I think the over-communication should be, hey, we're going through a really busy period. We're going to do this profit sharing with you or not, whatever incentives you have,
mm-hmm.
whatever good news you can give them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring on help, hopefully in this amount of time. But for now, you're going to be working your ass off, and I'll do what I can to help you, but I'm not going to kid myself or you. You're going to be doing most of the work.
Right.
I've had this talk too, and it works. Over-communication is my strategy. It works.
For a time.
For a time. The problem with me is I'm too optimistic. So if I told them, hey, it's only going to be 3 months and it's really six before I bring in a helper.
Right.
Then I have to explain myself. And then they think I'm just BSing. You know, so you got to be careful. But I think over-communication is the strategy I chose. And I've gotten better at that over the years.
So what happens when you're overworking your staff, right?
And yeah, being we did a webinar on this.
They're being overworked,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're just adding to that, right? What happens?
You're rewarding their work with more work.
Right. So what happens to the quality of that work usually?
If they reach their breaking point, it's going to diminish.
Right. So in the long run, though, you're sacrificing future studies potentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're producing poor quality work,
mm-hmm.
sponsors may not be as inclined to come back to you.
That's right. So long run versus short run. Another place where often things didn't go according to plan, I would have this conversation with my coordinator, hey, the next 3 months, you're going to be super busy, but I promise you I'm going to bring in help. I bring in help, and that help may not be good.
Mm-hmm.
That's and the coordinator assumed that they would be ready to go from day one, and it's going to take 2 months to train them.
And now you've You've actually added more work by bringing in that person because they have to train that person.
They have to slow down
and train that person.
Yes, yes. So it's art and science, I think.
Sure.
But it's a dictatorship, I believe, with you in that. That's the way it should be run. Democracy?
So
isn't that what academic institutions do? They have like
a board. Yeah.
But it seems like they don't get much done.
No, it doesn't. I mean, what we know of them, right? And what we've heard.
Yeah.
It's everything moves very slowly.
But they do like 200 studies a year. And they have like 50 people on staff.
Sure. So they're...
But at the end of the day, they're not even competitive with enrollment on any of those studies with the other sites. For the most part. Mm. Sometimes they do really well.
Right.
Like with the rare diseases. I mean, they have the brand name, so patients come to them. They trust them.
Mm-hmm.
If I were doing a clinical trial, if I were a patient,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know anything about the industry, I would be much more confident to go to university than to the mom and pop on the...
But first and foremost, wouldn't you trust your own doctor?
Yeah, I would. But let's say my doctor, you know, didn't have anything to do with it. I'm just searching online for trials.
Okay. So you're not going through your own personal doctor.
Right. Most of them do. But sometimes, you know, like I would feel more comfortable going at a university.
So you have a rare disease. Your doctor doesn't have a study for that. So you're just looking on clinicaltrials.gov for...
It's the brand name, brand recognition.
You would choose Mount Sinai over Breakthrough Clinical Trials.
Mount Sinai.
Oh, Breakthrough Clinical Trials versus Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
Right. Me too. I agree.
Yeah. As much as I wish, I could say, no, I wouldn't, because we own these mom and pop type of sites.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be lying if I said I would.
Right.
So there's these hospitals, universities have an advantage, but they don't really utilize it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they're governed as a democracy.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, it hinders production.
Yeah. So what's okay? Let's go one by one with the site size. So let's say, and the guy who the. This guy from a big industry vendor, I mean, publicly traded vendor, a lot of sponsors and CROs would, it's a household name amongst sponsors and CROs. Amongst sites, it's not. So we're talking about ways that they can improve their brand
mm-hmm.
for the sites. He broke it down and he had it spot on considering that he's like an outsider, not really in the site space. He said, you've got the sites like universities where they do like 200 trials a year. Then you have the bigger ones, private sites that do about 50. Then you have like the 10 to 20 studies a year. And then you have the 0 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Those are like the sizes. And I said, you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue plus or minus 5 here and there.
Right.
He's got it right.
Sure.
So, okay, 1 to 10 studies a year. Small mom and pop site. What we specialize in.
Right.
Well, what most of our clients fall under.
Sure.
Right. And this applies even if you're an SMO. Okay, if you're an SMO, all you are is a collection, sometimes a loose connection or a loose network
mm-hmm.
of small to medium-sized sites across the country.
Agreed.
Right? So even SMOs fall under this category because you have to manage each site really separately. I mean, what can you actually scale? The SMOs argue they can scale the startup regulatory and the contract and budget. Okay, that's fine. But that's startup. When the study's actually going, what can you actually scale? Not much. What you can do is write a check to one of your sites if they need help, like a bridge loan.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. There's no scaling, right?
Well, it depends on how you define scaling, right? So if you can dedicate resources to bringing in more subjects.
So, well, we're getting off topic, but it's okay because it's random musings. From the Clinical Trials Guru, the value prop of an SMO has always been, hey, sponsor, you choose us for your study. We already have 20 sites,
mm-hmm.
and we can scale most of the things, so we get rid of all the inefficiencies.
Sure.
Which is BS, because the inefficiencies that they can truly make progress on really are only at startup. And that's if they're doing a good job. Startup regulatory and budgets. That's it.
So, yeah, you think? Because
the only other inefficiencies they can leverage amongst their SMOs is like we do if you have in-house QA people that go monitor at different sites
The same study. Okay, what about if that SMO, that they're geographically clustered, right? In other words, you have 5 sites that are very close to each other, 5 over here very close to each other, so they can share databases and share patients.
But then why would the sponsor want all those sites?
Well, maybe because each site, say you have 5 sites in the same kind of geographical location, say Southern California, right? And 4 of them can each get 5 no problem patients. But this one has like 50 they can do, right? But they don't want 50 at one site. So they can send 5 or 10 to each of the other 4 sites.
Yeah, you can in theory, but sponsors typically don't like to have sites that close together.
No, I agree.
Especially if they're the same company.
Mm-hmm.
We did it at South Coast a bunch of times. Right. I had South Coast Clinical Trials Anaheim, South Coast Clinical Trials Norwalk, South Coast Clinical Trials San Bernardino.
Right.
And every now and then, I would say one or twice every year, I would get a good study at all 3 sites. That was sweet.
Sure.
I felt like this is what I need to be doing.
Right.
And it made it a lot easier.
Of course.
But that's not the majority of the times. The majority of the times, they were still fragmented sites.
No, and I agree. That's where you have to develop your reputation.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the SMOs. Or not the SMOs. The 1 to 10 studies a year sites.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have 1 or 2 full-time coordinators. And 1 or two alternating PIs. So in those cases, for the 1 to 2 coordinators at a small clinic, what you are actually trying to assess is, okay, how many studies do you have per coordinator? So you're probably going to start with one coordinator and not with two. So with this first coordinator, you're going to figure out, okay, what's the maximum capacity of studies for this coordinator? For the PI, that's not as important, because the PI can, I believe a PI can effectively maintain oversight over many more studies than just 1 to 10. Especially for those sites where the PI is located in the site and has a private practice. So really, your bottleneck is your coordinator. And the coordinator depends on their skill set and their level of expertise, can handle probably up to 5 or 6 protocols at a time. I've heard some stories, and we've done a webinar on this when Chris comes back, about some coordinators that are responsible for 30 studies a year. And we've actually done a webinar on coordinator work-life balance. But for the most part, you're going to have, I think, a reasonable amount of studies that a coordinator can manage on their own is somewhere between 4 to 7.
I think it's too high.
Yeah, and we did a webinar on this.
So if you're speaking in terms of in you know where the studies are at in total, right? In other words, if some are in closure, yeah, sure, you can handle more, right? But 3, I would say, actively recruiting studies would probably be ideal.
Yeah, see, I would push it further and go 4 to 7. But somewhere around that 4th or 3rd, you should bring in an assistant who you're going to simultaneously groom to be another coordinator.
Okay, so let's say you have 3 studies actively recruiting, right?
Because that's, by the way, exactly what we're doing at Global Clinical Trials right now.
Sure. Let's say you have, and Global is not a good example because there's none that are actively recruiting. They will be shortly.
Yeah, as of today. Well, not yet.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's say you do have 3 studies that you're recruiting patients for, and let's say they have 5 patients in each, right?
For 3 studies.
Right, in each. So now you have 15 active patients.
Yeah.
And you're still screening it all. So say you're screening 3 patients a week, right? So you could have theoretically in the realm of, what, 18 patient visits a week?
Yeah.
That's a significant number, I think. And then on top of that, 4 other studies that you're closing out.
Right.
Right.
So when you'll figure out your sweet spot.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm just using the example. Let's start with a small site first. 1 to 10 studies a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. Probably 1 or 2 PIs, alternating sub-IPA. Mm-hmm. 1 or 2 coordinators, alternating primary backup.
Mm-hmm.
And the boss, the dictator. Unless the PI is that person, which sometimes are the worst bosses you can have.
Oh, sure.
Because
they're unrealistic. They don't really understand the workloads.
Yep. I get emails regularly from coordinators that are like, my PI owns the site. He has no idea what my workload involves. He just wants more, and he keeps giving me more patients than wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you feel for these people, but let's not get off topic too much. So that's your dynamic, okay? The 2 coordinators, the 2 PIs, and you, the boss. What is the communications? What are the dynamics? How do you set expectations? How do you enforce?
Well, so again, I think the best rule of thumb is, on average, if you're a coordinator and you're responsible for every aspect of a study, the regulatory, finding patients, screening everything. Yeah. I think you're looking at each patient visit takes, depending on the complexity, I would say 3 to 4 hours, right?
Okay,
let's even say
1 to 4.
Okay, let's just gonna say, let's say it's 2 hours per patient visit it takes, okay. Right?
For the actual visit?
No, for the entirety of the workload.
Oh, so the visit and the paperwork. Because for every and hour...
And the regulatory. And, yeah. And the pre-screening.
Because what's the rule of thumb? For every hour of patient visit, you have like 4 hours of paperwork.
Okay, right? So if you go off of that number, really your coordinator, assuming they're only going to work 40 hours, can only handle...
2 a day, max.
Yeah.
At those numbers. Now, so this is where I think...
And that's not even having the other studies that you're closing down, right? Yeah. And handling those.
So I think you can streamline it by having the assistant do the EDC and the coordinator just do the paperwork.
Right. Have a recruit, dedicated recruiter. Yeah. And, yeah.
And a lot of that has to be initially, at least at these size clinics, the site owner has to wear many hats to do that.
Sure.
You may not want to be the coordinator, but you got to help your coordinator.
Well, I think as a site director or the owner, you at least can handle the recruiting.
Yeah, or you can help with the recruiting, or you can... you should definitely be doing biz dev. You shouldn't have your coordinator doing that.
Well, some sites do, though.
Yeah, getting studies, recruiting new doctor. I mean, some sites literally put everything on the coordinator and say, mm-hmm. Hey, you're the owner of the site, but you're not really the owner.
Yeah, you don't reap the
owner.
You don't reap the rewards.
Yeah,
but...
I'm the owner, but let's pretend you're the owner.
Yeah, right?
That's kind of the strategy for some of these people. So you don't want to, if you're the site owner, you don't want to do that because it's, first of all, it's not fair to your, even though you are the dictator, you're not being benevolent.
And you're not going to be successful.
You're being a tyrant.
You're not going to be successful either, I don't think. Honestly.
Right. Well, your coordinator's going to smarten up.
Yeah.
If their IQ is anywhere over 90, they're going to say, hey... Yeah.
And it probably needs to be a coordinator.
Yeah, they're going to say, hey, you know, I think I can do this on my own. And then what do? They call Dan and Chris.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you know, I want to open my own site. I've been working at this site for
and
3 years.
We take those calls.
Like almost every week.
Yeah. Or they find another employer.
Right. Where things are more streamlined. So yep. They'll graduate from the small clinic to either their own or a mid-sized clinic, mm-hmm. which we'll get into next. Or they grow with that small site as that small site grows. If that small site is being managed properly by smart dictator owners,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to be a small site forever. It's going to become a medium-sized site.
Sure.
Unless it's a particular lifestyle choice that those site owners made.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dynamic variables there. Okay, so that's the dynamics there. There's no, are you communicating at this point with this one coordinator? Are you communicating with the PI? What are you telling them? Are you actually telling them? Let's say you're not trying to grow it. Let's say you're happy with a small site.
Mm-hmm.
All you want to do is buy the building that you're in, mm-hmm. and just keep the same level of studies.
Sure.
Do you just promise them increased salary every 6 months, or an incentive? Or do you, like me at times with certain companies, I try to find out what they want, what the employee wants to achieve. Let's say it's to become a CRA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you work with me for 2 years. I'll pay you what's fair. And then I will help you become a CRA. Or even if you want to start your own site, we'll help you do that too.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea to see what their long-term goals is because because, one, it prepares you, right? I mean, you have a general idea of when your coordinator is going to be leaving you. If they say, well, my intention is I'm going to go to medical school, right? Which we've had a few of those.
Oh, yeah. Bunch of those.
Right. And then you know, well, so you're going to be leaving me 2 years from now, right? And I guess I need to groom somebody before then.
Yeah.
As your replacement. Or... You know, I want to be a CRA, but I need 2 years of experience. Okay, well, I mm-hmm. guess once you reach that, you'll be applying to be a CRA, so we can prepare for you leaving then as well. So, yeah, I think it works in your benefit to know what their long-term goals are.
Okay, next, the medium-sized. Let's say 10 to 20 studies a year. Okay. These are probably more streamlined now. They probably have dedicated EDC people, dedicated recruiter, dedicated regulatory,
mm-hmm.
dedicated contract and budget.
Yep.
Coordinator, like one of our employees who moonlights for us, she works at one of these not even a mid-size. She works at a large clinic. Mm-hmm. They started as a small, and they went through all the stages.
Right.
She says she's the coordinator, but she says everything is streamlined. Someone prints her source. Someone schedules the patients. Someone enters the EDC. Someone draws labs. Someone dispenses meds. All she does is literally just conduct the visit, and she has like 5 or 6 a day. Fills out the papers, hands it off, she's done. Everything's done. They have about...
Do I know this person?
Yeah, she moonlights for us. She's very good at making our slides.
Her name starts with an A?
And ends with a Y. And the middle letter is M.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know... I know she was working elsewhere, but I didn't know the situation.
Yeah, we know the clinic.
Okay.
They're big. They probably do like 40 studies a year.
And they're in Orange County?
Primarily, okay. Yeah. But everything's streamlined there. That's the large sites. But the medium sites will do that too. It's just to a lesser extent.
Right.
And I think they have like 40 employees at that clinic. Hmm. Including all the PIs and stuff. But yeah, right. Like right. 40 people. And they make 8 figures a year easy.
So,
like 10 to 20 million, maybe even 30.
How long has she been there?
A couple months.
No, she was at the other facility for about 2 months.
She's a great example,
actually. That's where I was going with it. Which does she prefer?
This one by far.
Okay, so she prefers the larger clinic that's streamlined opposed to here you handle everything, smaller clinic.
Yes, and that's because she, and again, some people would thrive in that smaller place.
Mm-hmm.
Like I, personally, I've only been an employee for 1 year when I started out. I think I would go crazy in a structured setting because it would become very mundane. And
it's tedious.
Yeah, I mean, the patient interactions, you can argue, is, you know, it's different every day. But still, I prefer chaos. Not just me. I prefer chaos. This person prefers order. And she thinks she can own a site one day. And I said, you know, you can, but if you prefer structure over chaos, I'm worried about your first 2 years as a startup because it's going to be zero structure.
Yeah, I'd be worried about it indefinitely.
If you can survive your first 2 years, you can build that structure. You can build it.
Yeah, you could.
It's getting there. That's the hard part.
I see. I'm in between you two in terms of
You're like a 1.5. I'm a 1. I'm a 0. She's a 1, and you're a 0.5.
I like structure, but I need some chaos once in a while to break it up.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want constant chaos, though.
That's me.
Right. I don't want constant. Yeah. But as a startup, even after 2 years, I think you still encounter chaos periodically, regardless of how you're structured. I think you're going to. Because you're going to, say you're specializing in one therapeutic area, right? And that kind of goes flat, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now you're experiencing chaos, right? Because now you got to change everything up, right? Or, I mean, there's just all kinds of different things that can occur. As a business owner, I don't think you're ever going to have it always the same, unless you're huge.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah, so I guess that makes it easy to discuss the middle-sized sites. So we talked about the small size for a long time. We just discussed the large sites for the last 5 minutes or more.
Mm-hmm.
The medium size is somewhere in between those two, right? Not going to get into details because they're in between those two. They're actually what you prefer.
Right. Yeah.
At the large sites, the dynamics, and it's still ultimately a dictatorship, as long as it's privately owned.
No, I was just going to say, if you're publicly
traded. When they're public, these are not. Okay. CROs go public.
Right.
Biotechs do, not sites. Let's take a large site, okay? There's an owner, or probably two. In the case of this company, I think there's two owners, okay? They're the owners. They set the tone for what's going to happen, but they hire full-time CEO, director.
Mm-hmm.
So now they don't have to communicate with all 40 employees.
Mm-hmm.
They just talk to their
leads,
the people they put in place. So really, they should be over communicating as well, but just to those people, those not individuals. To all 40
sure.
employees. And then you would hope.
It's like an umbrella.
Yeah, and then you would hope that those people you put in charge to run your business are communicating effectively.
Right.
You also hope, here's what happens in these large sites, okay, like when they get really big, like where this girl's at. The owner's kind of checked out. I mean, they've been making millions for decades. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, if we have a bad year, like, who cares?
Right.
You know? Let's put these people in place. They're managing it. We can just focus on bigger things, like expanding to other areas or just going on, like, key opinion leader conference speaking route, mm-hmm. which they do. Or, who knows, just going to the beach and hanging out, right? Right. They're over-communicating with their direct managers, right? Mm-hmm. The people managing the site.
Right.
Now, you have to be hyper-vigilant as a site owner in this case, because sometimes you'll get a manager who's just trying to protect their salary. And so what they're doing is they're not hiring the best possible candidates because
they don't want to be replaced.
True. Well, guess what the best possible candidates do? Besides threat to replace them, mm-hmm. they complain about things that could be better. And that reflects poorly on them. And so they stifle. So what you're doing long-term, if you don't have the right manager in place, you're stifling long-term growth, mm-hmm. right? You're basically accepting mediocrity. And that's okay as long as, if you're still seeing millions a year, it's okay, but you could be seeing more.
Sure.
That's the problem there. We haven't had to deal with that directly, but I've heard. Mm-hmm. I've heard and I've seen, like, firsthand these situations. And it happens almost every single time. The owners check out.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you have to have you have to know what's going on.
Know what's going on, and it's fine if you appoint a CEO to run your company. That person's an employee, and you got to hold them accountable. Well, are we growing as we should? Are we not? I mean, are you bringing in the best talent? Are you truly communicating their recommendations to us, or you're just like telling them, yeah, that's okay, or you just get rid of them, mm-hmm. and I won't even know about it as the owner,
right?
If yeah. I hired someone to run a site and I checked out and they fired two people, if I didn't even know who those two people were,
right,
I don't think there's any problem, and there could be a huge problem festering.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get there at some point, but although I've never wanted to own a mega site.
Wouldn't mind the income.
Yeah, I think I like the small sites. I think if we do mega anything, it will be either the CRO or the... No, not the CRO. Probably like one of the biotechs.
Yeah, sponsor.
We want to get to that point. And just have a network of sites. And some of them, if they grow to be big sites, that's good. But that's not the goal. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, I'm pretty sure that covers it.
Good podcast, Chris. I knew we can do it, man. Let's go take an IQ test again. I'll talk to y'all later, Guru Nation. Take care.
So, hey, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.